The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
All right, welcome to the Super J-Cast. You know that music. You know what that means. It's Damon, and unfortunately, Joel's still away on holiday. He's living his best life, as we all know. Maybe one day I'll get a nice month off, not have to talk about pro wrestling, carve out time. He's with his family, enjoying life, and I'm holding down the fort for a month. I don't know, something doesn't seem fair. Anywho, you know what that means. We once again had to put out the Super J-Cast bat signal, and we needed a little help because, you know, I'm not going to do a show solo. That's just not going to happen. So once again, I'm kind of blown away by this month, because we've had some really awesome guests, and it includes people that I did not expect to hear from. And it also includes, well, being that we're in G1 season, we might as well talk to someone who's in the middle of it, who's knee deep in it, who's swimming, against the current in, the summer months. He's a busy guy, and we appreciate him carving out time for us. Ladies and gentlemen, how about this one? The great based Aaron Hanare. How are you, buddy?
Good evening, man. Good to finally get on the podcast. It's been a while.
It has been. It's been something that we've been talking about and kind of going back and forth on, and getting times and schedules and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, finally you got a little bit of a rest during G1. And I appreciate you taking some time to speak with us and have our fans enjoy some Hanare talk.
No problem at all. It's wrestling's only half the battle for me, man. There's still a bunch of other stuff outside of wrestling that I'm pretty busy in as well. But now finally finished off all a bunch of the other projects and got some time to actually talk to more of the international fans, because I've been in Japan most of the time. So this year's really been the first year that I've been able to get out there and travel to America and other parts of Europe and back to the UK again.
Yeah. And that had to be pretty exciting for you. You know, I was at Washington for that show. I was in Philly for that show. I was like, oh, I should hit him up. I should just hit him up, see how he's doing, see if he wants to catch a beer or whatever. The Washington show was a little bit of a mess afterward because my favorite hockey team lost again in the playoffs. So I was miserable. So it was good that we didn't hang out. But then Philly, I felt bad. I was like, I'm right here. I mean, show them the town or something.
Philly was cool, man. I heard a lot
of. Did you like both of them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm from New Zealand, bro, so I don't know much about America, but we hear all the bad stories from the hood in Philadelphia. So, but it was good. It was fun. It was like, it was not as scary as the movies say they are.
It's not that bad. I mean, come on, it's not that bad. I mean, maybe we have a little gun problem, but
Oh man! So you noticed that first night in Washington, I was wearing a bulletproof vest.
I did. Is that why?
Okay. I honestly had no idea what to expect, because I went to LA at first.
Yeah.
And anybody outside of America that doesn't know anything about it thinks LA is like a hellhole where everyone's shooting each other up. And I thought I was going to get either arrested or shot for being brown.
Oh,
this is me just believing all the news media and stuff. Then I got there. I was like, this place is fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, you go to certain pockets and I'm sure everywhere there's good neighborhoods and bad neighborhoods. And, yeah. You know, as long as you're doing the right thing, you know, well, yeah. I mean, kind of like watching a parade.
Yeah. It was good, man. It was good. Washington was real nice. Seeing all the monuments and stuff was real cool.
The people yeah, the first nice time. As well. Was that your first time in Washington and Philly?
Yeah, it was my first time actually like traveling around the states. I've been to Florida before, but nothing really. Didn't get really enough time to do anything fun, so it was just training all the time.
Was it how great had it been for you guys? I mean, just everybody in that locker room that hadn't wrestled in front of fans. I mean, that had to be.
So it wasn't so much not wrestling in front of fans, but the excitement of the fans like yelling and wanting Taylor Russ to rip my knees off. The screams were pretty cool because in Japan it's just been everything you do is just a three clap chorus, 1, 2, 3. They're not allowed to yell still, even to this day, which is over 2.5 years gone in the pandemic, and they're still not allowed to cheer in Japan.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, how difficult is that for you as a pro wrestler?
That's the crux. It's like the spine of what pro wrestling is that interaction with the fans. So it's been quite difficult, but I mean, strong style, right? You just gotta take it on the chin and just keep going.
Yeah. How's this G1 been? Well, first, let's get back to finally getting that tap on the shoulder. To be in G1. I mean, you had to feel like you knew they couldn't pass you up this year, right? I mean, they couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I thought I would have been in it a few years ago and thought the same thing. But, I mean, for reasons outside of both my control and the company's control, such as injuries or a pandemic or scheduling or whatever. But I honestly... I didn't find out until the night they announced it when we were in Osaka.
Really?
So I had no idea. I knew I was on the tour, but I didn't know I was a part of it. And I was underneath the scaffolding. They keep a little TV in there for people to watch, but I was the only one there. I was just watching it. I wasn't expecting anything big, and then my name popped up, and I was like, oh shit. Oh. And like half-wise, I was like, oh, they might not choose me again this year because – borders are finally opened and everybody could get in. But I know, just comes back to that whole, the more you work, the more your work will be appreciated and understood. And they put me in. So I was like, oh, yeah. It wasn't like a surprise because I had been waiting for it for a while, but it was just like a yeah. Yeah, this is right. This is
right. Right. I mean, that's a sense of accomplishment for you. It's got to be a checkbox that's finally checked because everybody's been – I mean, it's been a long time coming. I mean,
definitely. Even that first New Japan Cup match at the start of 2020, I was supposed to go against Ishii in the main event. So that same feeling back then is the same feeling I had now. Like, it's just meant to be. I'm meant to be in that spot, and it's not the company's fault. It's not my fault that last year I got my neck injured, and the year before that, pandemic hit the whole world. It is what it is. The magical line that I love.
Yeah. Do you, when you saw that graphic come up, which, I mean, what were you feeling? Like, were you nervous? Were you excited? Were you, was there some vindication? Like what was going through your mind?
In a way it was like, I don't know if are we allowed to swear on this?
Yes, absolutely. Please. Yes.
It was just like a let's go. Let's fucking go. This is what we say back in New Zealand when you know, like, yeah, this is it. Let's go. Let's bang. That was my sort of thing. And I thought, yeah, well, finally, like, I could show the fans what I can actually do, you know? I've been getting tweets this whole tour. Wow, I didn't know Henare was this good. I mean, like, I've always been good. I just haven't had that opportunity to showcase how good I am. And I could feel like the fans this tour are kind of understanding that now. I hope you can too.
Yeah. No doubt. So let's go back to 2000, was it 17?
17.
When, yeah. the leg injury. Was it the Achilles?
Yeah, man. Complete tear, complete rupture of the Achilles. I had to get it fished out from my calf muscle, which had rolled up and stretched back down and sewed back together with sirters, metal sirters. So, yeah, it was pretty rough.
Yeah. No, I mean, no doubt. I mean, at that point in your career, are you thinking, I got to quickly get myself rehabilitated? I mean, and that's just time. I mean, you can't rush that.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, and then add the pandemic on top of that. Was there any point where you're just thinking, ugh, I can't catch a break?
I mean, a usual person would think that, but I come from a place where, you know, a lot of people don't really get any breaks at all. So, I've sort of been fighting an uphill battle my whole life, so I'm used to having adversity placed before me. So it wasn't really a big deal in terms of, oh no, can I make it or not? It was more, God damn it, another one of these hurdles. God damn it. And it's just, I don't know if it's me trying to project that onto my life, but I feel that's just a normal part of not only my life, but this job as a profession. You're always going to get injured. There's always going to be something. A flight's always going to be canceled. There's always going to be a hurdle in front of you, no matter what you do. It just happened to be the more painful hurdle that I had to jump over that time.
Yeah, I mean, the surgery and the rehab, that could not have been fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty quick. It's usually 12 months. I did it in 9 months. Luckily, I was still quite young. I'm only 29 now, still young, so it recovered quite easily. But the funny backstory for the Achilles injury, both my parents have torn their Achilles, so genetically predisposed to that happening.
Wow, that is kind of wild. Okay. So now, you know, we fast forward. We have a pandemic. We, you know, it's been a struggle for everybody. What's going through your mind there? So travel restrictions and crowds, you know, being minimal, and then, you know, clap crowds. And so, you know, like, what's going through your mind now when you know, you hear shows are being canceled and there's a worldwide pandemic?
Man, so that was supposed to be my first main event singles match the week after the pandemic was announced in Japan. So one, the big break didn't come when I needed it to come or when I wanted it to come. And two, I'm pretty sure you and all of the listeners for Super J Cast have heard about how New Zealand handled the pandemic. They didn't mess around. They didn't fuck around at all. Jacinda put her hand down and nope. She stopped people coming in and out of New Zealand. Full lockdown, military personnel traveling the streets. They didn't put that in the media so big, but there were police and there were army patrolling the streets to make sure nobody was outside of their house. So it's pretty rough. And add on top of that, every time that I came back from Japan or came back from New Zealand, I had to quarantine 2 weeks on either side.
Right.
So I think I've got the professional wrestling most quarantines championship around my waist.
What's all right? So, I mean, let's fingers crossed and all that. Let's not go through this again. But what did you learn about yourself during that time frame?
Oh man, I'm pretty what's the word? Mentally durable. I don't know if that's the word is. I know I did more than anybody else in that time in terms of the quarantines, but I could take a lot of things. I'm very I don't know what the word is.
Resilient,
like a tardigrade. You know what a tardigrade is?
No.
It's like a little bacteria that you throw in any environment and it just won't die. It could survive at the bottom of the ocean or in extreme heat. I don't know what Americans call it. Water bear? Is it a water bear?
It could be. My science is pretty poor. I got to be honest with you.
Oh man, that's all I do. All I listen to, all I study is like scientific podcasts and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, man. I'm an absolute nerd. Academic nerd. I was in academia before. But yeah, I learned that one, I'm good at learning. And two, I'm resilient. Resilience is the word I'm looking for.
There you go. where do you think that comes from? Is that something that you think your parents forced into you? Or
I haven't really talked about it in a public setting. Kevin Kelly's mentioned it a few times, but I'm from kind of a rough place back in New Zealand. Would be in the lowest tier of socioeconomic social class in New Zealand. That's what I credit for the amount of adversity that I could take and still keep going. So things like travel, things like quarantine, things like wrestling in front of a crowd that doesn't cheer, it's all like small fries compared to other stuff I've been through. So, and yeah, like you said, my parents as well went through a lot. So definitely taught me that. So, and I think I project that in the matches that I have, whether I'm losing all the time, whether I'm getting a smashing, I think that resiliency comes through there.
Yeah. No doubt. We don't have to get into specifics, but do you think that upgrade? I guess the question is: did you use education and reading and diving headfirst into science books and stuff like that as an escape?
Not so much an escape. I think it was more understanding, getting a more objective view of why those situations happened, instead of what other kids from my sort of demographic would do is they'll start internalizing it and blaming themselves and not realizing that, you know, our people got our land stolen and we got gentrified and et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to turn this into a sociology lecture.
But, No. It's very interesting. I think our listeners are fascinated by stuff like this. Yeah.
Yeah. But to put it into perspective, you're a big wrestling fan and I know most wrestlers around the world. Can you name me one other Māori wrestler?
Yeah. No. I mean, can we? No, probably not.
So yeah. I'm the only Māori that is contracted to a full-time company. There are a few in New Zealand, but I think that's just a reflection of our lives as a whole. It's hard to break out of anything and break into any industry, let alone just wrestling. I think the biggest industry so far is rugby. And you know, rugby and New Zealand go hand in hand.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's usually where our people find their escape. But I found mine in wrestling. And yes, books helped me to understand that objectively, but wrestling was always the big goal.
How did that come about? Like what was the thing where you were more of a, you know, MMA background as opposed to maybe the pro wrestling background. What brought you to pro wrestling? Like what, as a child, were you a fan?
Yeah, man, I was a huge wrestling fan. So like we got late reruns of Nitro and Raw in New Zealand. I think we'd view it like a few months after whatever had happened in the US. So I grew up with like a Sting and Goldberg and then Triple H and The Rock on the other channel. And then obviously it's a huge escape. That was the escape. Wrestling was the escape. Books weren't the escape. But just that, wow, there are these guys on the other side of the world that make a living out of slamming each other and beating each other up. This is amazing. And that's what captivates anybody in wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Is those stories there. So I've always wanted to be a wrestler. In high school, I did freestyle amateur wrestling.
Okay.
And I made I was the undefeated for my 3 years that I did it in high school. And from there, I went to MMA and jiu-jitsu. And I was also doing independent wrestling too. So as IPW New Zealand was the company I was wrestling with quite early, actually. And I faked my age. I did a post about it a few weeks ago. Told them I was 18 when I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah, so I did a bit of both as well.
So how did you find them? Like, so you have an interest. You're like, okay, this sounds like what I'm made to do. Like, how did you wind up walking into a pro wrestling ring?
So I'd come straight from rugby. So we do rugby in the winter and then usually cricket or something in the summer. And I chose to do wrestling. So I put in my application with all the fake age details and everything. Then they sent me the invite. And obviously every pro wrestling tryout starts with a physical. They're trying to weed out everybody. But I just ran through everybody because I was 15 years old, fresh off of rugby season. And it was just real easy for me. So I got in there. They thought I was 18. It wasn't until 3 years later that they realized I've been 18 for 3 years now. So yeah, that's pretty funny. But ended up getting a TV deal. So in 2010, 11, and 12, I was on TV. And I had just come out of high school, and I was getting money for that as well. So that was pretty cool. And they sometimes the series only ran in New Zealand and Australia. So, and then it got canceled because of some legal issues. So yeah, then after that, I met Fale.
And then things took off.
Yeah. So that's when I really realized the actual capacity to make wrestling a full time job. Because here's this other Polynesian wrestler that I know of, that I'm a fan of, and he's from the same city that I'm from. He's from a pretty rough area as well. And he's there doing everything that I wanted to do when I was a kid. So I was like, whoa, let's train with this guy. So I got training with him and Mark Hunt. He was in New Zealand training his camp for the Bigfoot Silver fights. And he trained with Fale, and then we ended up training all together. And then that led to the New Japan tryout.
How stressful was that?
No, it wasn't stressful at all, man. It was buzzy.
Yeah.
Like some street kid coming and training with these absolute superstars. It was amazing, man.
Nice. No nerves, no nothing. Well, you love the physical sports though. I mean, What do you think it is about you and your personality that just like you just gravitate toward knocking somebody down? Let's put it that way.
I think it's Kiwi culture, bro. We love rugby, we love boxing. If you're in a bar fight, anyone's got weapons, everyone will mutually put the weapons down and just elect to fight with their hands. I think it's very, very Kiwi culture. We just prefer a straight up fight, two guys bumping each other until someone's standing and someone's not.
Do you have any stories from the past? You don't have to name names, but were you a person that wasn't afraid to square up?
In terms of like a fighting or?
Yeah.
I don't usually show it on the camera. I'm putting my knuckles up to the camera, even though there's no camera, but
that's right.
I've got a lot of scars, on my knuckles. At one point I actually, when I was a student at university, I didn't have much money. So one of my jobs was street fighting on a Friday night, like wagered street fighting.
Oh my. Yeah.
And that would pay for my food throughout the week.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So now we got to get into that. So how there's a big difference between, okay, I'm at the bar, I'm at the pub, and I get into a little scrap, as opposed to finding people that organize this, you know, how did you find it and how did you get into it?
Oh man, there's a street. There's two streets in Auckland, the main Auckland city, right in the heart of the central business district, Queen Street and Fort Lane. Anyone from Auckland knows about Queen Street and Fort Lane. That's where everything. That's where all the big clubs are and everything. You could find somebody. I don't know if it's probably different now, but back then, I mean, it wasn't just. It was some like MMA fighters would do it as well. It wasn't like a big underground mafia type setting. It was more just like a wager.
And it would happen that night, or it would be like maybe shooting emails. You're in a group. How does that work?
No, you just go there. Like it's like the specific, like if you could think about Fight Club when all the cars are parked up, uh-huh. And just people standing around, something like that.
Oh, and do you pick the person? Like do you scope out a person and be like, I'm fighting that dude?
No, you just turn up. I mean, wow. Obviously there'll be people who know other people and some people who know people that have trained before or some people from specific gyms. And then I won't name the name, but there's a gang that went around and organized legitimate fights, legitimate sanctioned fights under a sanctioned body. I won't say what it is, the name of the place, but one of them would hold actual legal fights. So okay. It wasn't all just like underground stuff, but...
You were actually in Fight Club. to pull back the curtain a little bit, like we the last time I was in Japan, we all went and had a great dinner. You were with the Post people, me, my wife. Frazier. Great time.
Yeah.
But it was one of the most memorable occurrences in Japan that I've had. And for two reasons. Yeah. One was you said something that stuck in my mind to this day, where we were talking about guys who hit hard, and you made a comment of, well, I like to get punched in the face. And I looked at you and I said, I'm sorry, what? He's like, yeah, you said, I like to get punched in the face. It wakes me up. It gets me into the match and it gets me going. Do you still subscribe to that theory?
Yes. And I have been feeling bitter about it because studies have come up saying that hyperbaric therapy is good for CTE or any brain damage from punches and stuff. So I feel better about it because now I know there's a fix-all at the end of the tunnel. Probably not a good thing to say, but it's like I mentioned Mark Hunt earlier. Have you ever watched any of his fights?
I have, yes.
The one versus Ray Sefo, when they both just drop their hands, hit each other in the head, and they're both smiling and they both look more awake.
Okay, yeah.
That's sort of – I don't know if it's a genetic thing, but that's how it feels. It's like dopamine. You get hit in the face and like your nerves go into fight or flight mode. That's sort of like a buzz, like a trip for me.
I'm not getting punched in the face. I'll stick with
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think you said there was a match with Yuji Nagata, or it might have been some. But yeah, you actually were telling him, punch me, get me in. Yeah, I mean that. But that's something that you're cut from that cloth, and I'm fascinated by that part. So now G1 is here.
Yeah.
Did you do, you got the announcement, not that much time, but did you think, okay, I have to train differently, I have to do more, like what's your workout routine now? Because the second thing from that dinner was that you were so disciplined with your diet. You had a scale, you had you were trying to get a certain amount of protein and
yeah.
Like, so is there one, where do you find a discipline for that? And two, did you do, or are you doing, or did you do anything different leading into this G1?
The first one, I forgot what you said for the first one.
Oh no. So where did you find a discipline to be able to do that?
I think that one came from amateur wrestling, just the dieting in order to make a specific weight. For me personally, it's not really a challenge to do it. When I first did my first meal plan with my coach Marjon Abelardo, he trains professional bodybuilders. So I did my first meal plan with him, and then I realized, wow, shit, I feel great. It wasn't just an aesthetic thing. Like, I actually felt really great. That was, I think we had dinner, what was that, 2019?
It had to be 2020.
Yeah, so that was when I was in my peak condition. So I had abs and I was shredded and lean, but big as well. So that's when I just felt the best I've ever felt in my life. And that was no drugs. There was no crazy supplements that people talk about. That was all just weighing my food every meal, and I felt great. So that the discipline wasn't really a factor because I felt good to do it. I know most people don't like doing it. And for this specific G1, in March is when I started bulking, not knowing that I was going to be in the G1. My trainer just said, hey man, I want you to put on some weight. And it's been pretty tough though, eating 500 grams of steak, 400 grams of chicken, and 400 grams of potatoes every day. But it's worked out, and the fans are loving it. And the slams aren't as painful anymore. The bigger you are, you'd think more painful the slams would be. I've actually been feeling quite good because of the amount of weight that I've put on.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I know a guy who can get you some protein if you.
Yeah, man. Apparently, protein's really expensive in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, from what I hear.
Inflation in this market is crazy, man. It's pushing people to do crazy things.
It sounds like it. It does sound like it. So, first G1, there has to be a little bit of excitement, a little bit of – and first match is Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yeah.
You tagged with him in tag league and multiple multi-man tags with him.
Yeah.
Was there any nervousness? Or was it just excitement and let's show the world what we can do?
Definitely nerves, definitely. More so because I don't want my first G1 match to be remembered for being shit, you know? I really wanted to just unleash and show the world what I could do, show the fans that what I could do, especially the fans that have been supporting me even before I got any big matches at all, so... but I've always known that I could bang at the G1 level, but just being able to actually do it is a whole nother, it's like the real tangible results of your hard work. So that's why I was nervous at that point. Tanahashi is just like the biggest star in Japan, you know? So it's like going up against Goku in the Tenkaichi tournament. That's the equivalent.
Nerves and excitement and all of that, and you had a banger of a match, fantastic match. Is G1, especially this year, is it everything that you thought it would be? And I mean that in the sense of the physical demands, the mental demands, the nervousness, the spotlight, like is it what you thought it would be?
I think a big part of coming up the young lion way, so like doing the young boy and the seconding and looking after the senpais. My first tour was actually G1 2016 when I was seconding, and I was watching guys like Tanahashi and Naito and Okada every single day, every day of the tour. So those types of rituals, if you will, sort of condition you to already understanding the toll that it takes. I'd say the young lion part, doing the squats every day and then training and then the matches and then all the breakdown, is a bit harder than being in the G1. But hey, I'm only 3 matches in. Usual G1 tours, you have 12 or 15 matches, right?
Yeah.
So I think I got in lucky by only having 6 men in the block. I think it's 6, yeah? 6
or 7?
Yeah. It's quite lucky. So this is quite a entry-level G1, if you will. When they go back to the big blocks, I think it'll be even harder. So I don't want to count the chickens just yet.
Right. Do you like it, though? Do you like the sense of wrestling? And then there's quite a gap between your singles matches and everyone's singles matches, the way the schedule is laid out.
Yeah.
I mean, does that give you a little bit of time to recoup, rest, do dumb podcasts like us? I mean, is that, you know, I mean, do you enjoy that? Or would you rather have a little bit more condensed schedule where it's almost every other night?
It depends. It's slowed down a bit since, since the pandemic. Before the pandemic, so like 2018, 2019, I was wrestling every other day anyway. Not singles matches, but just in general every day. That was quite hard doing that. Not only that, but all the traveling and stuff. But having been in a group with United Empire, so you got guys like Jeff, Will, and Oka on this tour, so we could sort of like spread the load between us, so we're not smashing ourselves too much. But yeah, I love those. I love the 6-man tags. They're great.
They are fun. They look fun.
You could keep your blood flowing. So like if you have a niggle, if my calf was quite tender, as you could probably tell after that Zach match. But the multi-man tags after that, they helped the blood flow, and I recovered quite quickly from that niggle. But that's just part and parcel of the job and of what we do.
So those tag matches serve even a greater purpose. Not only to get over the matches later on, but you know, you can stretch out some injuries and get loose. And okay,
I mean, it's all about blood flow and controlling inflammation. I think most full timers understand that if you could control your blood flow and your inflammation, you could do this for years and years. Just look at guys like Nagata and Suzuki, been doing this since they were teenagers.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So what, I mean, I have to ask, cause I am the most out of shape human being on earth. How do you do that? How do you control the blood flow? How do you what are they doing that other people aren't?
Oh, they do, man. Oh, they're still doing the same shadow boxing, squats, cardio, and skipping before every match. Mm. And that they've been doing for the last 40 or so years. So that's, if I can do the same style that they do, man, We could keep in this game for a long time, man.
There was talk about that time in the dojo. You mentioned it before, where that was the hard work. It felt like, you know, the working out, the setting up the ring, the tearing down the ring, you know, all the things, the duties that are involved in being a young lion. Yeah. Talk about those days and I don't necessarily want to say the struggles, because it's a learning experience, but boy, when you're in it, you got to be thinking, whoo, this is rough.
Yeah, in a way. It was the first time in my life that I didn't have to worry about food. So if you come through the dojo, you get an unlimited amount of food, as much food as you want, which is a poor kid from Auckland, New Zealand, coming to that is like, wow, I just hit the jackpot, boys.
Sign me up.
Yeah. So that was sort of like, I paid for my rent and I paid for my food and my water and my gym with squats. Hey, I could do plenty of squats, you know. So sort of like a – you get all of this stuff, but you just have to do some squats before that. And I actually like doing squats, so it was good. But, yeah, it's the toughest thing is the sleep schedule. So you're awake. You're the first guys awake and you're the last ones to go to sleep. If it's a tour day, you wake up. You do your training, you clean everybody's stuff up, you get all the bags and everybody's suitcases on the bus, you travel to whatever town, you do the show on whatever town you go to. Before the show, you're doing training and squats. Then you do your match, and then you do all the seconding and all the corner stuff, looking after the senpais. And then you go back to the hotel, you unload everybody's bags, you do the laundry, and then you could sleep. And then you wake up first the next day. So it's quite tough. And there's a reason why not many foreigners do come through the dojo. And it is because of that. It's because that's what weeds people out. That's what asks people. And it's what makes people ask themselves, do I really want to do this job? Am I willing to do whatever it takes to get here? And that's the reality of what the young boys, myself and everyone that came through the dojo, have to go through. So it's tough. It's tough.
When you finally, we'll call it graduate, is there, aside from what we see as fans, is there something behind the curtain where you graduate, you're no longer, you know, lifting bags and setting up rings? Like, do they come to tell you that? Do they say, okay, officially, you no more, you don't have to worry about it? Is there a ceremony? Like, how does that work?
So mine was quite different. As you know, I came back from the Achilles injury. And then they said, you toa henare. So I didn't really understand what it meant. Am I a young lion or not? And I sort of got stuck there for quite a few years because I didn't know. Other people would get sent on excursion as soon as they finished their young lion, like the Japanese guys. Usually get sent off on excursion. But because I got injured, I didn't really have that excursion to be sent off because I had already had so much time off and I couldn't let them risk letting me go because of that. So I got stuck in that role for a bit. And it took me a while to get out of that. I'm sure you're aware of it, and I'm sure all the fans are aware of it, but it is what it is, my magic line, you know?
Yeah. Well, so now they come to you with the idea of joining United Empire, or?
That was Will. He's a smart guy when it comes to putting a team together. So that was New Japan Cup last year, and he took me out to dinner. I was like, oh, this is weird. And he never asked me to come out to dinner. And then he pitched it to me then. And then I think that was in March New Japan Cup. And then I joined in April. So it happened quite quickly. I wasn't really fully prepared for what it would entail. But I'm so glad. Honestly, it's the best career move I've ever made in any career.
I mean, and then it was just over a single dinner. Yeah, and the ball starts moving. I'm sure he's communicated that to you, but or maybe he hasn't. But why do you think he went out of his way to get you involved?
I think he definitely saw me struggling. I think similar to Jeff, like Jeff was coming over from ROH and he was a crowd favorite, but he wasn't really getting anywhere. It was the same as me since that Young Lion, I didn't really get anywhere. I didn't really know what I needed to do. I was there hustling. I was there grinding. I was working every show, wrestling every match. But I just wasn't pushing through that glass ceiling, you know. But Will was sort of, I don't know if people talk about him, but like whatever people say, whether they hate him or not, he's a fucking genius when it comes to professional wrestling. Whatever you want to say about Will, he understands this game more than anybody around. And if it wasn't for him, I'd probably still be stuck in that same spot that I was in before.
What do you like? You talk about in-ring stuff and the mind that he has for pro wrestling. Like, is that just him just spitballing stuff and throwing stuff out, or with ideas? I guess my question is he more of an idea guy than most other guys?
He's ideas mixed with pragmatism, and like he can spitball and he could pick the spitballs which would work, which the crowd gets fired up. Anything he does, just it's amazing to watch, tagging with him, just watching him go. It's just like, wow, what the hell? It's just like he's a Mozart looks at a piano, a Will Ospreay looks at a pro wrestling ring, and he just gets it, from that be like spinning a hook kick at some guy's chin or power bombing ELP vertically, Everything he does is amazing. And just being around that and all these guys, like Ork is a weird dude, man.
Like, let's talk about him. Yeah. So he seems like a fun guy. Okay, but weird. Let's get into the weird.
He's weird. He's like he's one of those comic book geeks that just watches cartoons all the time, and I don't want to say geek. Otaku is like a specific term in Japan. And he's always trying to hang out with like porn stars and like gravure idols and stuff like that. And he loves Las Vegas. But he understands what riles people up. He understands what makes people go crazy. And he understands himself. He's real smart. He was always good at like grappling and technical things. And he's an amazing cook as well. He's the most underrated cook ever.
What's his dish? What does he make that's off the charts?
He used to make a thing in the dojo called Yudofu. I don't know how to explain it, but it's a Japanese traditional gift, but. And he told me American burgers all taste the same.
They kind of do. I mean, to be truthful, they kind of do. Now, let's go full circle. So 2017, is it odd that you have this spark, this rocket that's now strapped to you, and you're in the same faction as the guy that you were in the ring with when you had your injury?
Yeah. I think that's coincidental as well. But then at the same time, we both came in together and we're both in the same class. So it's not too out of the ordinary. If anyone, I probably see him more than anybody else. We live quite close to each other, so see him quite often. On top of all the bus rides that we have together and everything. I can't keep up with him, man. He's going out with all the sponsors and stuff. I prefer to either just go to a jiu-jitsu class or Muay Thai class or something at night.
But I'm sure there's been one or two nights that
some crazy ones.
Because it seems like every time I hang out with you, there's always beer involved. I remember the first time I met you was at one of the Fale sponsored events.
Ooh, yeah.
And then after, there's always a little alcohol around. Right. And I'm not saying that you partake, but it's around.
No, it's definitely around. I actually stopped drinking as much as I did.
Good. I wish I could say the same.
I actually did a doctor's examination on my liver, and he advised me I should stop drinking. So, I drink on Christmas and I drink on my birthday, and that's about it.
I'm going to be very truthful. I don't think I will go get one soon, just because I know the damage that has been done to this. Or like, I just don't want to hear the bad news. I know it's bad. It's like one of those things. It's like, all right, I know it's bad. I got to stop. What are we looking forward to G1? We have Naito on the schedule, right? And we have Evil on the schedule.
Oh, Kento will be a good one.
Yeah. Is that the one you're looking forward to most?
I was looking forward to the Goto one and the Zach one quite well. But, I mean, like, these are all – I've wrestled Goto in the singles before, but just singles match with anyone, because it's usually a long time between singles matches for me. So this is like Christmas. Oh, man, I get to fight all of these guys one-on-one. That's great. It's just more so, one, I enjoy it. Two, they were all tough guys. And three, just the fans love seeing me get slapped in the face and keep pushing forward, you know?
Yeah. What do you think you've grown as a pro wrestler just from this tournament so far?
Yeah, definitely. Just like I said, just having the freedom to have singles matches more often. I mean, it's a lot more fun, in a sense that if I stop him, I could stop and think about what I'm going to do, you know, which has helped me a lot. Just thinking on the fly, you know, kick here, punch here. It's treating it more like, I don't know. It's just more fun because I don't get to have that time, you know.
Are you the type of guy that sits around? Not sits around. I say that like it's like you're sitting like me on the couch. But are you a person that you see the schedule ahead of time and you think, okay, this would be good to do this, or this would be good to do that? Like, do you plan that stuff out in your head a lot?
Nah, man.
The ring and we'll call it and ring and go. Yeah,
I'm notoriously known for not even knowing what match I'm on. So
really,
the last Goto match, I didn't even know that I was on pre-main event semifinal. I was like, oh shit. Oh, okay.
Music's playing?
I didn't know until I got to the arena. I thought I'd be like opening G1 match or something. But no, I'm very notorious for not checking the schedule. Or else, because I'm the type of guy that'll, if I know what I'm doing beforehand, I'd stress out the whole day about it, you know? So I'd rather just leave it to fight the battle, cross the bridge when it comes, you know?
I won't tell you which one you have in order. How about that?
Yeah, that's good.
So literally you could go to the arena and really not know who you're fighting that night. And yet that kind of eases your mind a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, more so if we're thinking about it from a hormonal standpoint, my cortisol starts rising the moment I know what the job is. I didn't even know what the G1 was until they announced it in Osaka. I didn't know it was four blocks. I didn't know I was in one of them. Because if I worry about it before, there's that. It's not anxiety. It's more just like I'm an INTJ, which means I'm the guy that prepares every single plan of action. But if I don't know, I can't plan. I can't waste that energy. I could spend that in the gym or going for a run instead or writing another book.
Writing it. Now, are you reading books or are you writing books?
Both. I just finished.
So, because you mentioned that. Yeah, you mentioned that when we were lining this up, that you bring your laptop with you.
Yeah.
Would you mind sharing what you're writing?
So I finished my first, it's just an ebook at the moment, before I moved to Kindle Direct Publishing. But I studied politics and sociology, and I used to teach sociology at university. So the book is about masculinity and how we redefine it. And it's my belief that most bad things that have happened and are happening in the world today are because of men losing their way as men. Like that toxic masculinity is now a thing that's taking over the world, you know?
Right.
And we've just misplaced what it means to be a man. And that's why things like abuse come from, the rape, stealing protein, things like that, you know, all come from. So I'm just trying to, I've been doing free programs for men over the last 10 months. And I just thought I'd put that all in a book. So I just finished that last week.
Wow.
Yeah.
When can we expect that?
It's online at the moment. I'm going to wait till the tour's finished before I focus on trying to get the paperback out to Amazon.
So, that's what you do in your spare time to wind down. You work on that you're like it's almost as if, and pardon the dumb,
no,
but it's like you work in the gym and you work. You know, you're working your brain too. Like how important to you is that synergy?
Like, it's funny. Like I didn't even mention the content of the book, but this is exactly the content of the book.
Is that right?
There's the physical, mental, mastery and, the lover aspect, which is like taking care of, nurturing and protecting family and friends, stuff like that. But yeah, it's all dimensional. So everybody thinks of masculinity as just, you have to be a big, tough, strong guy and not show any emotion. When in actual fact, there's many different dimensions of what it means to be a man. And men are falling down because they've misplaced that, you know. So it's wow. Real funny that you mentioned that before I actually talk about the content. But yeah, that's essentially what it is.
That's pretty amazing. That's really great stuff. When you – the stress is – so, like I guess the if I were to take and everything changes, everything evolves. But if I were to take wrestlers from the 70s, and wrestlers from the 80s, and wrestlers from the 90s, and wrestlers from the 2000s, and wrestlers today, I feel like wrestlers today have a unique challenge, and that challenge is social media.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of no social media. I'm not. At all. But other wrestlers find themselves in trouble and find themselves trying to navigate those waters. One, do you know of any specific training that they would give guys like you to kind of navigate those waters? And two, do you think social media is necessary for your career?
I'm not sure. They definitely don't give any social media training in New Japan. But I think it's more a common sense, you know? You don't treat people like shit. Don't be an asshole to fans. Just, you know, I think the big problem with Twitter and especially American Twitter, I'm sorry, but there's just people forget that there's a human being on the other side of that.
Right.
If you want to bring out the sociology, it's called simulacra and simulacrum. People are living in a simulated version of what they think reality is, and they forget there's an actual person with actual feelings on the other side of that. Yeah, man. I just think that the easiest way to not get in trouble, not offend anyone, is just to remember we're all just humans on a computer screen, I guess. Yeah. I haven't really – I got an easy rule of thumb. If I see anyone write anything negative about anybody, I just block them. I've got about a 500 long block list at the moment.
A well curated block list. I love it. I'm a fan of it. Absolutely. No doubt. All right. I got to ask because I'm an old guy. What does based mean?
Based, man. It's like just living your life, not really bothering about what other people care about or what other people think of you. It's like you're a human. You're born with a set of inherent qualities, inherent weaknesses. You are what you are. Like, there's no changing who you are. There's no changing the kind of people you're attracted to. There's no changing what you do with your life. Sure, you could change your body, you could diet, you could go for a run, but the inherent essence of who you are doesn't change. So why would you lose sleep over what people would think about you, you know?
Right.
That's people that you like. Yeah, I don't care what you think about me. I'm gonna do this.
I love it. I understand now. I feel good. I feel like I feel younger.
It started as I think it was a Reddit or some internet craze, but I don't know, a bunch of the bros in the manosphere start throwing it around, so
take it on. Man, nice
based, bro.
I love it. Listen, I appreciate you carving out time for us today.
No problem.
When I go into these, I can't say I'm nervous, but I just don't know where it's going to go, right? I feel like in the past month, I've talked to a lot of different people. We had Robbie Eagles on last week, which was great. And I just don't know where it's going to go. And I like that looseness of it, of just going. I had no idea we were going to the places we were going today. You know, like to me, that's exciting. Like you talk about getting punched in the face. I love it when someone takes like a question and takes it in a direction. And then I got to follow. That's the path we go.
That's great.
So,
man.
And I think a lot of people learned a ton about Aaron and Hanare that they didn't know before this show.
That's how I hope it's a good thing, you know.
That's a great thing. I think it's a fantastic thing. I think it's anything, you know, that can help see a side of you that no one really – I mean, I didn't know. Not many people know. So I truly appreciate that. I appreciate that that candor here
no
today.
No problem. I think one of the problems of me staying where I was for all those years is that I wasn't letting people know who I actually am. They all they got was – the young boy they saw in the ring every day. But I think taking the next step in the career, I've actually grown as a person, not just a professional wrestler, you know, being more based, you know, it's helped me be more based.
I love it. I'm going to change the name to the Based Super J-Cast. What do you think of that?
Yeah, man, it's good. Based month.
That's we're all doing it. I love it. This is a change for the better for everyone. Listen, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know our listeners are going to freak out over this. They're going to love this. Anything that you want to plug, anything that you want to let our listeners know that's coming up, G1, t-shirts, what you got going on?
I just love the new Base t-shirts come out. If you guys get to grab one of those from the New Japan Talk On shop. Other than that, all the socials at HenareNZ. And if you guys want to read about the that masculinity book we talked about, it's The Primal Bro on Instagram.
Excellent. Fantastic. I think everyone will hop on to that. Listen, again, I know I said it 1,000 times, but I really appreciate you carving out some time for us here today. You're in the middle of G1 and you're taking the time for us. So I tip my cap to you, sir.
No, this too is for the fans, man. It's fine.
Excellent. All right. Listen, we're going to wrap it up here. redcircle.com/superjcast. If you want to throw us a couple bucks for great content like this, I mean, where are you getting this anywhere else? Nowhere. So you can do that. Make our lives a little bit easier. Speaking of t-shirts, we got one as well. How much would it cost for you to wear one of our t-shirts to the ring? How much we got to pay?
If you can Venmo it right over. Man, most of my shirts are free gifts. So.
We'll Venmo it right over. Super J-Cast, or prowrestlingtees.com/SuperJ-Cast. You can find that there. You can be very fashionable wearing one of those, I'm sure. Follow our editor, Dan. He's at LousyEra219. Escape the Box is the band. You can listen to them on Spotify, Apple Music, and all that fun stuff. Joel will be back. I don't know. Aaron, do you want to be my co-host from now on? Would you mind? Would you
find some time?
I mean, I don't think he's coming back. I think this is a very subtle way of Joel saying I'm not doing this anymore. He's just staying. He's been in the UK for a month. I mean, that's where he's originally from, but it's the first time he's been back in years, too. So
he's living all over the world, right?
Yeah. Well, he was born and raised in London, and then he had a girlfriend, got married. They moved to China, and wow. They were right near Wuhan. And he couldn't get back home. Joe couldn't get back. It was right after Wrestle Kingdom. He couldn't get back home. So they went to Thailand, and he's had to literally relocate, sell his house, all that stuff, and start a new life. It's been an amazing – our podcast is the chronological record of Joel's life being turned upside down. Yeah. He lived in a hotel for 6 months, I want to say, maybe even a little bit longer because he couldn't go home. Yeah. He just had a kid. Now he has two. It's unbelievable. Anyway, yeah, screw Joel. Again, thanks for joining us, the great Aaron Hanare, based Aaron Hanare. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you.